Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast, post-race Canadian Grand Prix 2023 edition. Nero making shapes. Audio-only listeners can't see the treat you're putting on.
We're cutting some shapes right now, and that's why they should like and subscribe on YouTube as
the
well.
Reason you should like and subscribe is because Alex Albon, P7.
He's the greatest.
Yes!
He's the greatest. The GOAT.
Oh.
The GOAT. That's why he's the GOAT.
We're watching him on screen now as well, with Lily as well, big.
Oh man, come on.
That's sweet, man. I love it.
What hair colour does he go for now? Because that's, as we saw a second ago, that statistically is Williams' best finish since that P2 that George got in that rain-soaked Belgian Grand Prix.
And even then, that wasn't a proper...
It wasn't really. It was a qualifying session, if we're being honest. So
Williams haven't been good since, 2017? They were fifth in the constructors.
Yeah, we're probably looking at, you know, when it was Stroll and Massa?
Mm.
That's probably the last time they got a P7.
And look, you know, Alex made the one-stop work. You know, a safety car could have been an issue there, but he made it work in the end. Great result. Obviously, I'm very happy. I'm very gassed. But it's not all about... As much as I'd love it to be, it's not all about Alex. Should we rewind first of all and talk a little bit about qualifying? Because I think as much as this race wasn't one that will go down long in the memory for... I mean, apart from Albon fans, of course, like myself. Quali was a bit of a madness.
It was... it was easily the best part of the weekend, I would say. I mean, we had some craziness, to be fair, in practice as well. With some mad weather conditions, Bottas saying it was good weather for a duck whilst he was skating around in a swimming pool down at the hairpin.
But
qualifying, absolutely mental, like proper changeable conditions. Mm. Not just like, oh, it's going from wet to dry. Mm. Like it was constantly evolving. Like it would dry out a little bit, then boom, it's raining again. Now it's torrential again. Now it's drying out. And I think there was a session once in Austria that was like that. There was a quali, and I think it was the one where Lando almost got pole.
Mm.
And he finished like P2 or something. I can't quite remember. But it was just that constant, like, it's raining, now it's not. It's raining again, now it's not. And obviously provided some unreal results.
Well, that's where the team game comes more into it, right? Because, yes, Max put it on pole, but Red Bull made the call to get him out first in the queue so that he could get his two laps in comfortably. Obviously, Piastri crashed, so that, you know, messed with a lot of other, and that's why Nico was able to start P2. Obviously, he wasn't actually able to start P2 because of the penalty. But yeah, at the end of that, I think those kind of qualifying sessions, it was a bit of a shame in Q3 because you didn't have that crescendo because everyone had to set their laps early doors.
Yeah, they just started raining again to the point where it was going out.
So that was a bit of a shame. But obviously, we saw Checo and Charles drop out. Look, Charles recovered well in the race.
Rare Ferrari, good strategy, by the way. For what we say about Ferrari regularly, there's a lot of stinkers, there's a lot of clangers there.
Yep.
That was a really good strategy from both to not only get them back into the top six, but they beat Sergio Perez on merit in a Red Bull, which has been dominant in the hands of Max.
They were
obviously
both
George
ahead of
Checo, made a mistake, ended up beating him too, but that's probably the best, honestly, that Ferrari could hope for, given...
Yeah, I'd say so.
The quali session.
Yeah, because, I mean, Mercedes race pace has been clear of Ferrari for a while now.
Same as well.
Yeah, of course. So, I do think, you know, obviously, rightfully so, as Charles Leclerc, we've got the Sky Sports feed on the screen behind the cameras right now, having a chat. Looks happier, certainly happier than he was yesterday. What do we think? Because, you know, Charles... I think it's got to the point now where he's not biting his tongue. I think at the start, you know, you want to defend the team, you want to protect the team to an extent. There is that, as a driver, you are almost the voice. You know, what you say carries a lot of weight.
You're the face, to an extent, of an entire team, hundreds of people.
And he was very prepared yesterday to be like, I thought we should have done this, but we didn't. The team wanted to do this and I don't agree.
Yeah, and that's why we're here.
Which is indicative of, you know, him not feeling too satisfied and happy. Yes, it worked out today, but... I don't know, where do you think his head is at? Because this isn't the first time we talked about Charles' future at Ferrari.
I think it's a reflection of, I think him coming out and being very vocal about this. Charles is a very emotional man. I mean,
yeah, he wears his heart on his sleeve.
His heart's on his sleeve. And I mean, again, I mean that in the nicest way. But like, you don't. it's often more him blaming himself for stuff on like team radio.
Yep.
Like it goes wide. Ah, it's my fault. I am stupid.
Barrier,
I am stupid. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And such quotes. Yeah. But it's not
Charles Leclerc special.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little soundboard. Just like, no. But it's not usually like sort of lashing out at the people like sort of around him or at Ferrari.
Yeah.
So it's kind of rare. And I think it is that sort of, I think just it's a tactical lads, get your shit together. Because if I wanted to, I could leave now.
It feels like he's almost had enough of, almost, I think this could be quite poignant because I do think there's a fine line. And I think if you just are quite, not placid, but quite, you know, you just do what the team tell you to do and you just, you react to whatever, because as a driver, you do need to give that insight. You do need to, that there's a time and a place to listen to the team and a time and a place to listen to the driver. And I think maybe Charles has been guilty of not being as firm as say Science has been at times.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Science came into Ferrari. There were many a call in, you know, 21 in particular where, you know, Science made the call and got it right,
yeah,
and was prepared to kind of overrule the team. And there is, it's a balance, isn't it? It's a fine balance. But I think that Charles maybe needs a little bit more of that. You know, you know, for example, if Max Verstappen doesn't agree with a strategy, Lewis Hamilton doesn't agree with a strategy, they're going to like make it very, very clear from the get-go.
I think that I know we do still see with Lewis occasionally, like Mercedes will say, nah, do this, and he'll do it, but he'll go, like, guys, we shouldn't have done that on team radio after or whatever. But for the most part, yeah, he'll make his own decision. Charles never really makes his own decision and just goes, no, lads, we are doing this.
Well, if the driver physically drives into the pit lane, the team will then have to react to that, even
yeah.
if, like, you know what I mean? So it's, yes, the if Charles was like, I'm coming into the pits. So, yeah. So for example, qualifying. If he said, I'm coming in for slicks.
Yeah.
I guess it's difficult, right? Because to do that requires, you know, if that backfires like on you and you're as a driver, you've taken that almost ego-led decision, which mm-hmm. isn't always a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
Like, and then get it wrong, then you're going to feel like a bit of a mug.
No, 1,000%. But I think when it comes to, when it's like data stuff and the team are saying, no, you don't do this because we can see all the numbers. Mm. Yeah. We know what the deal is and this is the best thing for you. When it's stuff like weather, changeable conditions,
yep.
you as the driver are the one actually driving out there. And if you're seeing a dry line developing, if you're starting to go exponentially quicker on inters and you're going, ah, this is dry enough.
Now, yeah, yeah.
You have got, for me, the driver has probably got to be the one to make the decision unless there's like more rain coming on like the radar that they can't see.
And that's what Leclerc communicated on the radio, didn't he? And he was like, I think this is slick weather. Like there's a dry line. We need to go on slicks. And the team were like, no, like they played it more conservatively because no one else was jumping on the slicks at that time either. Yeah. But he had the confidence to be like, no, I think this is slick weather. It was, you know, and that ended up paying dividends for Albon because he was like the only one who jumped onto softs at that time.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm, you think
it's buts and maybes, isn't it? A little
yeah,
bit.
I just
they did it, as we said, at least recovering the race.
I just really hope, man, because like Charles is so good, isn't he? He's such a talented driver. And it's like, if Ferrari don't deliver the goods, I'll be gutted because I don't think he's going to leave.
I don't think he's going to leave now. I don't think there's like a door that just like naturally opens for Charles Leclerc in like the driver market. Like, there's more and more talk of Lewis and Toto are going to go for coffee together and eat croissants and sign a contract. And
wait, is Lewis's contract confirmed yet?
It's not. No. But he like they asked him about it in a press conference, and he was like, "Well, hopefully, I'm going to meet Toto this week, and we'll like coffee."
It was a bit awkward that, like, wasn't it?
Like, lads, just signed a contract.
Just signed the thing.
You don't need to go to like a 3-course meal together to sign it. But yeah, with that door probably closing, I think that's kind of like it, really. If you're Charles, you're probably just going to end up signing a Ferrari deal.
No, I think Charles has had enough of the
shenanigans,
the approach that he's, and I think he needs to just be a bit more of a dickhead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in a good way, like a positive dickhead.
Yes.
I mean, just like, just doing what he wants.
Positive dickhead, copyrighted if anything, by Tomo.
Right, if anything, if Charles does what he wants, right, and it goes wrong, all right, arguably you learn more from that as a team by like being, okay, why did Charles think this was the right decision? So many times we've gone for something that the driver hasn't agreed with, and maybe actually they can learn more from that in the long term. I don't know, because there seems to be a fundamental issue. You know, whether it's, you know, radio communication with science and, you know, double stacking at Monaco, is like, fuck, you know, this.
Yeah.
Like, I know Fred's like, he's not been there long. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time, but it's still like, it still feels like it's a
work in progress.
Yeah. And again, like, maybe it's because it's Ferrari, we're jumping on them a bit more. I don't know. But
but again, you know, they did well with the strategy today, stay ahead of Sergio Perez, who I was quite disappointed with.
Yeah.
This weekend as a whole, like just from start to finish, I can't lie.
Second, suboptimal recovery drive.
Yeah.
Same in Spain, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I think with Spain, I was kind of like, I can see progress. Not fast enough, but I could see, like, he was on mediums compared to hards that the Ferraris were on. He was dropping off.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, boss, I'll be real. You should be overtaking them, let alone.
Yeah.
Getting dropped by the one the slower tire, it just stunk a little bit. And obviously, like it wasn't even really like a one specific mistake in Q2 cost him. It was just like a general lack of pace or confidence, maybe. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it's hard to say for sure. Like I listened to Checo's post race, and he was kind of like, they were just on the wrong tire at the wrong time, which he wasn't the only driver to be on the wrong tire at the wrong time. Yeah, yeah. You know, Leclerc, Stroll. Both had that issue. Bottas thought he could have been top 10. Magnussen, obviously seeing Hülkenberg get into Q3 and put it P2. You know, he wasn't happy to go out in Q2 either. So it's kind of a bit of a lottery, way Q2 was. But again, the lack of ability to really recover and move through the field and still finish behind the Ferraris.
Yeah.
You know, he finished behind Russell in the... It does make you think, you know... We know how Checo's a very, very accomplished racing driver. He's got multiple podiums in a subpar Force India. Mm-hmm. He won a race in a Racing Point. You know, he deserved that Red Bull seat. He deserved to replace Alex off the back of 2020. And he played a pivotal role in Max winning that championship. Mm-hmm. You can't doubt Sergio's credentials.
Nah, not at all. But it's a form. It's a form thing.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, he started the season great. And yeah, we saw this with Bottas many a time against Hamilton. You know, keeping up them levels is hard. But like, how much of it is Max just making the difference, right? Because this Red Bull is only, I can back this, right? So I did a video a couple of weeks ago. And essentially what I did, imagine you've got Checo and Max at that team, but Max is terrible.
Yeah.
Back marker. Yeah. Doesn't score a single point, right? Yeah. Terrible. It's all on Checo to do. You could say that. Yeah, it wasn't great this weekend either. I was about to say, oh, no, actually, he had a stinker.
De Vries, we'll get onto De Vries.
We'll get onto that.
Set 8B.
Oh, God, yeah, that was not good. So going into this weekend, Checo would be leading the championship if Max wasn't there. So Checo inherited all the wins that, you know, when he finished P2, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah. I think Alonso probably would have got a couple there.
After this race, with Fernando Alonso winning, because, again, Max is not about, Checo would have finished 5th instead of 6th. Fernando Alonso, 150 points.
Mm-hmm.
Checo, 149.
Wow.
So Fernando would be 1 point ahead if Max Verstappen was terrible.
Right. So, yeah. So if Max Verstappen after nine did races. Not exist, was a shocking driver.
He was just at the back.
At the back the whole time, no points.
Yeah.
The way that the point system works out in F1, because obviously you get a lot more, there's a bigger gap between first and second.
Yeah. Fernando would have got 25 points today. Checo would have got 11.
Wow.
So Fernando would be 1 point ahead.
That, I guess this probably isn't accounting for like fastest laps and stuff.
No, it is.
It is.
Yeah, I did the proper man.
He's a
went back. Every time Max got a fastest lap, I was like, who's the next?
He was the next fastest. Oh, you're a thorough individual.
Because Checo got fastest lap this weekend. So
yeah, he did today. Obviously put the softs on.
But that would still put him 1 point behind Fernando.
Wow. See, that honks. I'm not gonna lie, but that's so interesting, because obviously, again, it doesn't account for like the overall maybe lap pace of a Red Bull.
Yeah,
but it just shows that
obviously it's not perfect, of course.
No. Well, I'm but even either way, it's still like it's still very interesting.
It tells a story to an extent.
It tells a story of, at the end of the day, for the most part, it is Max that makes that combination so deadly.
Yeah.
You know,
he makes the difference. If
Max didn't exist and he was terrible and Sergio Perez was the lead driver, I'm sure Perez would still win the championship come the end of it.
Yep.
But that is crazy because that is just not as dominant.
Again,
as
I'm saying like there's one point between them. I think Fernando is a better racing driver than Checo.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. And so they're almost level on points. So yes, I do think the Red Bull in Checo's hands, you know, without these, you look at the first four races, Checo's miles clear of Fernando.
Yeah.
You know, he's had these, you know, three Q2 exits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three lack of Q3s. He's four times this season he's not got to Q3.
Yeah. So what, Australia?
And then
Monaco, of course, Spain, and then
Spain, Canada.
Yeah.
So again, that paints, of course, the context would be, you know, if Checo was on his own at the front, he wouldn't necessarily need to push as hard because he wouldn't have to be trying to catch up to Max and all that, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, then it brings into question, and again, the pressure is on Checo. I know, you know, Horner said that, you know, now this gap's opened up, there's less pressure. There's always going to be pressure if you're getting slapped by your teammate.
Yeah.
Especially if you're at the front, because then you're right in the lights, like we have today. Like you're being captured.
Yeah. And in 4K.
Yeah. So do you think that, like, what do you think, if things carry on as they are, what do you think Red Bull do? What does Checo need to do? And how do you play this if you're Christian Horner? Because I don't think there's a huge issue personally.
So that's what I was going to say. First of all, I think for this season, bless. I think there's not like a pass. There's a certain level of bad that it would need to get to. And I'm sure actually like something would happen, but we're nowhere near that level yet. Like Sergio is still fast enough, is just in a really poor bit of form, more on a Saturday than anything else.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he's
yeah.
just looking very inconsistent right now. But I think because of the sheer like performance gap that Red Bull have over everyone else, it's coming down. We've seen gaps shrink today. I know we had a safety car, but it was kind of early on and we were still below 10 seconds come the end of the race.
Yeah.
You know, we had Red Bull leading races by like 30 seconds at the start of the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was mental. So it's coming down, but the way things are in the constructors, Red Bull are like, they've got double the points.
Yeah. Pretty much double. Yeah, yeah.
So there's no problem in terms of losing a constructors championship, right? So for now, it's okay. I think if I'm Sergio, I've got to put at least 3 seconds in a row on the board. I've got to do that because it is still the fastest car. It's dominant because of Max, but it's still the quickest car that there is.
Because
I've got to finish second.
Yeah.
That's the bare minimum for like the next three Grand Prix and stick it in Q3.
Because come next season, if Mercedes and Aston Martin have caught up with their cars,
yeah.
then Checo putting these performances in like he's been doing over these last few races will curtail constructors' challenge.
Bro, this is what I said on the show as well. That's why it was the end of Bottas. Because as soon as Mercedes were like, oh, okay, we're under pressure here, there's actually another team that could beat us, Bottas has to go. He can't be finishing 14th in Turkey, spinning it six times,
but also
without consequences. And that would be the case with Red Bull if Sergio Perez's performance has stayed as they were now. And then suddenly you've got Aston winning half the races in a season. You can have a number one and number two driver, but the number two still got to be raking in enough points to do the job.
Well, in that instance as well, there was the risk of losing Russell. Because if you were like, oh no, Russell, you got a fourth year at Williams, you know, I think
he would have sacked it off.
He's then like, okay, let's keep my options open now. If someone else, an Alpine or
especially
a Ferrari
after the season that Valtteri had that year, it was shocking.
Yeah. So do Red Bull have that problem? Because I mean, look, you've got Checo in the seat, Daniel Ricciardo. I don't think Daniel Ricciardo would be doing any worse a job than Checo, in my opinion. No. I don't necessarily think he'd be doing a much better job.
No.
I still think he'd be like comfortably be beaten by Max for sure. But I don't think you'd do a much worse job. Then you've got Yuki Tsunoda, who's doing well. He's not, I mean, he's got De Vries, he got beaten by Gasly. He's got De Vries as a teammate. So it's difficult to really measure Yuki. Then you've got like someone like Liam Lawson in the sidelines and all these younger drivers knocking about. Red Bull don't really have a clear, it's not like Yuki's been good, right? We're massive, but he's not been like, I think he's done as much as he can.
Yeah.
But he's not had those like, he's been really good, but I don't think, is it enough? As much as I love Yuki, I'm not sitting here thinking he needs to be in a Red Bull. I know you. I don't,
it's really tough though, because like relative, like that AlphaTauri is last in the Constructors' Championship.
2 points, yeah.
Two points. And it's like
both from last, Yuki.
Yeah. And it's not even close.
And like, then average finishing position, he's like last, 13th, last. I think he's 13th.
Yeah.
Average finishing position.
Maybe it's probably gone down now just because of today. Yeah. But like, because he's been slapping it 11th, 11th, 10th, 11th, 12th.
Yeah.
Like, don't get it twisted. I probably wouldn't put him in the Red Bull.
No.
But I think he's been pretty... I think he's been impressive this season. That AlphaTauri honks, and it's got brake problems all the time.
I think he's been impressive enough, but not so impressive that if Red Bull don't promote him, that they're at risk of losing him to another team.
Well, I mean, no. Well, they probably are at risk of losing him to another team, but it's whether they would care enough. I know that sounds harsh, but it's one of those where you might sell a player that's from your youth academy and you're like, he's good, but he's not, we're winning the league and he's not going to do that.
Yeah, Yuki's, what doesn't and help
that's,
Yuki?
That's the sort of level that maybe Yuki's at in terms of like the Red Bull Junior program. They're happy to have him at AlphaTauri, but if he went somewhere else, they're not going to like lose sleep over it.
Well, again, I mean, they let Albon go and multiple times they brought him back, didn't they? They let him go as a youngster. They brought him back like... Yeah, I mean,
I think Perez is only under pressure, yeah, when a couple of these F2 Red Bull Juniors get into F1 and they start showing something.
Do you think there's any Ricciardo pressure right now?
He's making some pretty decent TikToks, to be fair. I think I'll be honest, I don't think that he's like right now. Sergio's just got to like, this is like a bit of a damage management period right now.
Yeah.
And he's, I'm telling you now, if he goes another three races, yeah, and doesn't finish second in any of them, I'm not even asking him to win, to beat Max.
He just needs a clean quali.
Clean quali, clean race, finish a second, not like 30 seconds off Max.
Well, Monaco, he pushed too hard in the dryer.
Yeah.
He's had two wet qualies with issues, where quality is always potentially...
Yeah, and Australia, to be fair, wasn't his fault, right?
Yeah, he had an issue with the car. So, yeah, that's the thing. I guess it's a way up, isn't it, for Red Bull? Because I don't think, you know, unfortunately, you look at the car, you look at what Max is doing with it, Checo should be second every race, really. He should be on the podium every race, really.
That is it's harsh, but that is like a bare minimum.
That should be the bare minimum. So when he's not, you're going to get... And again, where you've got Ricciardo... With all the, yes, Checo's got huge support. He brings in a lot of commercial stuff, which helps as well. That always helps a driver. Daniel Ricciardo is the most popular driver in the States, as far as I've like heard. And he's always on Jimmy Kimmel and all that, right? And he's been doing like, he's doing his own like watch along. He's doing his own like TV stuff on Shantae and all that. Like the product of bringing Ricciardo back for Red Bull.
Yeah.
From a market, again, this is the point of Red Bull being in F1 is marketing.
Yeah, fact.
So the pull of putting Ricciardo in that second seat alongside Max Verstappen, it still makes sense.
Would you do it at the end of the season if this sort of Sergio Perez continues?
If it stays like this, yeah, I could see it happening. I could definitely see it happening. 100%, I could see it happening.
But would you do it if you're Helmut Marko?
I think the...
Or Christian Horner or whoever.
If I'm... Well, obviously, they've got their new board at the top of Red Bull now. If I've got my Red Bull cap on, right?
From other energy drinks are available as well, by the way.
They are, of course. Yeah. I probably would put Ricciardo in, yeah, because it just brings more eyeballs.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo brings more eyeballs. Yes, obviously, in South America, Checo brings so many eyeballs, but globally, Daniel Ricciardo's got lots of fans in South America as well. I just think, like, that pull of Ricciardo... And all the stuff he's doing now, you know, he's doing this, you know, this watch along, he's doing all these, you know, I think he's getting involved with that kids broadcast that they're doing as well.
Junior broadcast, I think he's involved in that stuff. Yeah.
Like to then put him in the seat as well, like at the end of this year, next year.
Yeah.
I could see it happening.
Yeah. No, it's a weird one because like for vibes, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I was, and you know me, I love making decisions on vibes alone.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I in that situation.
Good way to live your life, man.
I think that's slight tangent. I think that's just the way to go, mate. If you make all of your decisions on vibes, yes, you'll have regrets. Absolutely. But in the moment, you are vibing, and that's all that matters.
And regrets are part of that, you know, you live and you learn.
You live and you learn for future vibes.
You don't learn if you never live.
Facts. Tell them again. I don't even, what was I going to say? Oh yeah. Right, yes. For vibes, obviously I would make that decision of bringing Daniel Ricciardo back. It's marketability. It's who Daniel Ricciardo is. And also just having him back in the sport. It just feels right, to be honest. However, that McLaren spell just really concerned me a bit.
Yeah.
I would be scared putting him back. We're not back in a big, it has nothing to do with actually being in a big city. It's more like, man, if we're being real, he stunk it up at McLaren and then we're going to just slap him back in the best car on the grid.
The thing is though, Red Bull know how to get the best out of Ricciardo.
They do.
He's the closest driver we've had to Max throughout his entire career.
Well, in terms of driving style?
No, like teammate.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like on a given day.
It was a different
like
Max, though. It was a different Max.
It was a much younger Max. I don't think it was slower Max.
Yeah.
I think it was more raw, like his decision-making, but I think the pace has been there. Like, you think like 2018 when they were, you know, battling in Baku, right? Mm. That's Ricciardo trying to make the move on Max.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not really seeing that the other way around. You haven't seen that since, again, Ricciardo. You didn't see that with Gasly or Albon.
Could I just say, I think that was the most Red Bull lineup as well.
Oh mate, yeah.
Like in terms of what
this
the brand
is, what I mean
is
as well.
Yeah, in terms of what the brand
bring
is.
Bring that back together. Like
that was like just pure energy versus just pure raw determination. Yeah. And it was just like the most extreme lineup imaginable. Like two of the biggest, like not characters per se, but characters in like a TV show sense.
Yeah.
Together in a team.
It's important to Red Bull to, you know, when they first came into F1, they were the ones blaring the music and
bringing
their energy station to Monaco and like kind of shaking it up a bit. And I think, like those two characters, and Max is so entrenched in that brand now.
Yeah.
So part of Red Bull.
Yeah,
and that was the, I mean, I loved Renault Ricciardo. I think Renault Ricciardo was probably my personal favorite. I thought, 2020 Ricciardo, oh, I missed them days so much, man. He was such a joy to watch.
Yeah.
And he was so happy. But like, bringing that back, I could see it. But I guess another thing I wanted to bring up, on the back of an Alex Albon, absolute worldie, P7.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any regrets at Red Bull letting Alex go now? Because obviously since he's, you know, he had that year off, he's now at Williams, did an equal job, I'd say, relative to Latifi as George did.
Mm.
Obviously, new generation of cars, so hard to say maybe Latifi struggled more. And now, you know, he's been very good this year. He's had his moments, he's had his poor moments, he's had, I think, consistently looking at that Williams, obviously upgrades for this race, P7, one stop, made it work, has done that before. You know, the team knows they have to kind of throw caution to the wind to get these results, but you know, Alex is doing really well and he's in a confident place. And obviously I'm chuffed to see that because 2020 was such a difficult season for him to bounce back from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, character building there for sure. I think long-term he'll reflect positively on that experience, even though it didn't go well. Do you think there's any, you know, regret there at all?
I think there might be a little bit in the sense of like, I hate the phrase ceiling,
mm-hmm.
but it does have like relevancy and like, obviously mm-hmm. you would argue, like for me, Sergio Perez is not going to get better than where he is now
mm-hmm.
as a driver, apart from my, I guess, levels of experience. But to me, he's already an experienced driver.
Yeah.
There's not a part of me that goes, Sergio Perez could do with a bit more racing experience. Like, he's been here long enough. You know what I'm saying?
Long enough, yeah.
Whereas I think Alex Albon will continue to get better for like the next 3 or 4 years, potentially. I know he's not as young as
like
other
27,
drivers.
27, I think, now?
Yeah, because he was quite late into like GP3 and stuff,
a couple of years older than
like George
Lando and George,
stuff
yeah.
like that. I mean, because they were the young guys in there. I feel like he'd been in like other series and shit before he went F3.
Well, so
he had like a weird journey, but
yeah, he was doing, I think it was F3 he was doing well, and then he had an injury.
Yeah,
I think he crashed in Baku and he had an injury and he missed a couple of races, and then he said it was like the car. I think they did a podcast with him and Tom Clarkson, and he was saying like the car was just never the same after that,
because
that's what sometimes happens in junior formulas.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been
doesn't necessarily get built the same.
I think, you know, his biggest advocates have been other drivers throughout. I mean, not just because George is his mate. I'm sure that plays a part, right? But George was, you know, George wasn't going to recommend Alex to Williams if he thought he was going to do a terrible job.
Yeah, yeah, facts.
Like,
facts.
Even if he's his mate. And like Charles, Alex is a great driver, mm-hmm. clearly. Is he going to be the, you know, when he was in that Red Bull, you know, was he going to be the next Max Verstappen? No. Max has got that generational built for racing style. But then Pierre proved, you know, you can be slapped up by Max Verstappen and doesn't have to define your career.
No, not at all, not at all. I think that the thing that Red Bull will always look at was, would Max Verstappen have won that championship if Alex Albon was his teammate still?
It's a good question. It's a good
obviously,
question.
There's no like surefire way to prove yes or no. But for me, it may be a no, because I think Sergio did so much during that season and genuinely supporting. And Max didn't really get that at all during the Gasly or Albon era. No. I think Albon was so unlucky, so unlucky, because he had like 3 podiums taken away from him, like late in races.
Yeah.
And I feel like if he'd got those podiums, you'd look back at his time and
Austria
and Brazil were the main ones. And I think he broke down in Austria the week before the Hamilton one as well.
Yeah.
Or something. And I just remember thinking, obviously, yes, there were some shitters. He finished like ninth every now and again. I'd be like, okay, this can't really run, mate, in a Red Bull. But I think he was unlucky too. But Sergio came in and provided consistency.
He did.
And was always in the top four. There wasn't really races where he was like languishing in like 10th or whatever.
The difference was that the 21 Red Bull was much more competitive
hands
of Max relative to Lewis than it was in 2020. Lewis was clear in 2020.
Yeah.
Like Bottas would, you know, comfortably, like, would finish ahead of Max plenty of times as well. So, I think that's where, again, Alex kind of looks back and he's like, he felt like he put a lot of work into that 21 car when he was. When he was on the sidelines, and obviously he helped in his way. I agree. I think Checo's experience made the difference to help Max win that title.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think Alex would have done a better job. I agree that Checo should have replaced him. But in terms of the pace, and when you look at the actual pace differential, there wasn't a massive one. I don't know. I think that, you know, Red Bull have had a lot of drivers come through their system and leave and go on to do different things, where it's like Jean-Luc Vergne in Formula E or Sebastian Bourdais in IndyCar now, whatever. Like, there's been so many countless. Brendan Hartley doing WEC, you know, he almost won with Toyota this year.
It's one of those where
I think they would have loved to have made it work. It didn't work. And I think actually now what's best is Alex just builds his own career away from Red Bull, because he's doing a great job right now. And hopefully with Vowles in charge, he can make Williams great again.
Yeah. I mean, look, listen, his stock's high. You know, he's got a dedicated head chairperson of the Alex Albon chairperson committee society.
Absolutely.
Ambassadorial enterprise. So I personally think this is, I agree. I think it's one of those where I think if Red Bull could go now, like without any politics or whatever, do you want to drive for Red? Like, do you want to drive for us? He'd do well. But it so much has now happened that can't.
Yeah. Or, no, you know. I think that ship's sailed. But but look, ultimately,
right person, wrong time, maybe.
Perhaps. I don't think he's ever going to be a Max Verstappen. You know, because I just think
not
Max
many people
is.
Are, like.
Yeah, I think Max, just like, you know, when Lewis came in as a rookie, you know, when Sebastian started doing what he was doing, when Schumacher, you know, came in that Jordan in 90s, you know. So like it sets a new standard, and I think that is incredibly difficult to touch. But at the end of the day, ATR, we're going to talk a little bit about that, because this is the final race before the end of this month.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
and looking at the constructors, AlphaTauri stone dead last.
Yeah. So just to clarify to everyone, the reset for ATR is at the end of this month.
Yes,
and that means that all the percentages will change based on how much wind tunnel time basically everyone's going to get now.
So Aston Martin have been eating well for the last 6 months because of how poor they were last year.
Yeah.
But now that advantage is now almost wiped out. So Red Bull will still have 63% at the moment. Mercedes will be on 75%. Aston 80, Ferrari 85, Alpine 90, McLaren 95, Alfa Romeo 100, Haas 105, Williams 110, AlphaTauri 115. So not, apart from Aston Martin, to be fair, not a huge amount. You've still got Alpine, McLaren kind of in their little, doing their little thing.
Range. Ferrari are going to get a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mercedes going to get a little bit less.
Yeah, it hasn't actually changed massively, apart from, again, Aston Martin losing a big chunk relative to what they were seventh.
Yeah, they've kind of just uniformly overtaken everyone. Everyone else has kind of stayed where they were before. AlphaTauri are probably going to get quite a decent
chunk. Yeah.
As well, because I think they were probably eighth time last year. Now they're 10th, so they've got 10% more.
But do you reckon that, you know, as much as this Canadian Grand Prix wasn't a... It won't live long in the memory.
It wasn't a barnstormer.
But there were a few little... I mean, first of all, Haas stink.
Haas fucking reek.
My God.
Jesus Christ.
How could you be like half decent in qualifying and then just arse in the race, man?
The thing is...
I feel for Nico and Kev.
I do. Like, look, listen, as I said on the show, I've always been a big advocate for Nico Hülkenberg, but I do...
Yeah, that's choke on those lines, Niren.
Next question. I do genuinely feel for him. And the worst part is, I remember seeing, I was obviously watching quali and like second place, unreal, red flags, great timing, whatever. But there was no actual belief of like, even before he got the three place penalty, it was like, we've been here before. I've watched Haas this season.
Yeah.
Like, I think Spain, both of them had to make an extra pit stop compared to everybody else. And they were still going backwards the whole time because of tyre wear. These lot can't go five laps without munching a set of Pirellis. It's crazy. It looks like a 20p coin when they take it off.
I just don't know what to say.
No race pace, no tyre conservation at all.
I mean, they are like...
Just wear an enchilada the whole time.
they are literally a diet Ferrari.
Yeah.
And they are performing like a diet Ferrari where they're all right on a lap, but just no race pace at all. You had like Albon all over the back
that of train,
Hülkenberg for
that,
like ages
that
and
train.
Got past him eventually.
Yeah.
Like he had one sniff at it and fucked it up and then he went again and got past him.
Yeah.
In the Williams...
I mean, where did Hülkenberg finish? What, P15?
Hülkenberg was, I think he was around, he was like well out.
I mean,
behind Tsunoda.
I mean, how? Like, from fifth on the grid, right? I know Bottas managed to do, did Bottas manage to do a one stop, by the way?
Bottas got a point.
Because I don't know how he ended up in the top 10, like low key. He just sort of spawned there. And I don't really... Obviously, Albon did a one-stop
as
well. Yeah,
if you pit at the right time, you could obviously make the one-stop work.
Because, yeah.
Because Albon did. But yeah, I mean, it's like... Haas are just frustrating, man.
They're frustrating, but I don't expect anything different.
Yeah, but you know in Austria, next race, they'll be fucking sick because they're always good in Austria.
They are.
They're always... There's something about Austria
they
love.
Is Gunther Steiner from Austria?
No, he's from Northern Italy.
Oh, yeah, of course he is, isn't he? Yeah.
But it's like really near
like
the border.
Germany and Australia and stuff. Yeah.
I'll be there for qualifying on for the Austrian Grand Prix.
We love that. We'll give them some words of encouragement, please. Yeah. I think they need
there
it, honestly.
To see K-Mag, Hülkenberg, P2, P3.
Yeah, well, obviously K-Mag didn't have the greatest of Grand Prix, was involved in a very B-Tech collision with Nick De Vries.
I've got a B-Tech near him, so take that back.
Oh, no, okay, yeah, fair enough. No, I actually will, because that is a offensive, like, because that racing was abysmal. Like,
can you set the scene?
We'll set the scene. I've tried to almost erase it from my memory, but I'll try and paint a picture. So De Vries is looking to make a move on K-Mag into
sizing
turn
him
one.
Up, yeah.
Sizing him up. He's got the DRS, and George Russell with his wonky steering is kind of watching on behind. Just seeing what goes on. People are pitting. And down into turn one, Nick De Vries launches it. Now, I think it's a good move at first, right? The first half of the move, great. It's from quite far back. He's made the move up the inside.
Yep.
But halfway through the move, De Vries just goes, don't want to steer anymore. Just kind of levels it out a bit and just like makes contact with K-Mag. And I don't think that's necessary because I think at that point in the corner, you can't, if you're Magnussen, you can't bail out there. You're already
the outside, then, yeah.
Yeah, if this white line on the desk is where the track ends and then we go into the hairpin to the right, we're already here. Mm. We've already arrived like into turns. You can't now push him wide there. It was just clumsy. Obviously, Magnussen goes, I'm not having that, sends it back up the inside, and Russell passes both of them. Sort of compromises both their runs. De Vries now gets a little bit desperate and then sends it into turn three. on the dirty side of the track, lots
filthy
up,
side of the track.
Filthy yeah. side. It was
because you got
really,
no support series cleaning it up either. So
no, it was
offline was bad.
It was the Dakar Rally over on that side of the track. Genuinely,
Carlos Sainz Senior.
Yeah, and yeah, just locks it up, and they both obviously go on because Magnussen can't turn right with a.
Yeah, Magnussen tries to turn in, and there's just
there's a wall of Tauri.
Yeah, a wall of Tauri.
A tower of Tauri. Yeah,
and then it's just like really because like De Vries stops. Magnussen stops behind him. Yeah. So then De Vries can't reverse because Magnussen's there trying to get into reverse. And then it's, and you know what? I'll take it back. BTEC was the right. It was a terrible course I was on.
It was just like, if I'm either Magnussen or De Vries with the season that's currently happening, both of them are in, I reckon, the top three stinkers for the year so far, right?
Mate, yeah, I said I've not been happy with Magnussen.
Yeah.
I've been disappointed.
It's not what you need.
No.
It really isn't what you need.
Hülkenberg's been making him look, I mean, 6-2 in qualifying head-to-head now.
And the gap's crazy as well. It's not even just like, oh yeah, he's been two places ahead of him six times.
De Vries is somewhat, I mean, he got out qualified by Yuki this time, but he's somewhat, I think it's 6-2, I think between them two as well. But I mean, that's just, it was just clumsy. Again, that first little move, it's tight, it's close, but yeah, I mean, that was what they were I think they were 30 seconds behind Joe. In P16 on the track.
Yeah.
And we got a little bit. I mean, at least it gave us a little bit of drama, I guess. But it's not helped De Vries' cause, I've got to say.
It doesn't, because it's like, obviously, from an outside perspective, it's the one bit of racing that we've actually seen of Nick De Vries attacking, like in attack mode, being like, I'm going to take some positions here.
Yeah.
He's had an all right weekend. You know, Yuki was struggling as well, was like firmly kind of away from the points, to be honest. It wasn't like he was getting battered. The first time we see him go for a move proper, like a proper elbows out, going to need some serious talent to make this work move.
Yeah.
Battle, and it just ends in disaster.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not going to do his confidence much good, I don't think.
No.
Given where he's at right now.
Not the best, but also at least it wasn't quite as egregious as the error that a certain Mr. George Russell made during that race. Yeah, a certain
bad PR 63, actually, to be honest, this week.
Negative PR 63, yeah. It wasn't helped by a certain quote that was doing the rounds, which I'm going to try my best to find really quickly on the Sky Sports F1 channel, which they kind of set him up for defeated, didn't they?
Yeah, well, the thing is, so for those that don't know, George was invited by Simon Lazenby on Sky to do a lie detector test.
Which Lewis did one earlier this year, didn't he?
Yeah, so Lewis did his. I'm guessing they filmed it at probably the same time. And it went out this week. And George was asked some tough questions, I'm not going to lie, about his teammate, about his season, all that sort of jazz. And I think people have taken,
should we listen to it?
Yeah, we'll listen to it. But some people haven't reacted well to it, and I'm sure
I'll play the full little clip. So the first question is quite reasonable, and he gives quite a reasonable response.
Yeah.
Lewis is the greatest driver of all time.
Do you think Lewis is the greatest of all time?
Yes. Fair enough. And the result of the lie detector test is that he was telling the truth, which is good. That's nice. So he genuinely does believe that Lewis is the greatest of all time.
Fair. I don't know how much credit I give to lie detectors.
Now, yes.
Yeah.
Are you faster than Lewis? Now, yes.
Now, yes. Now, there is a lot to unpack in that, because it's like, obviously,
what does he say?
Yeah. First of all, he's set up for disaster.
No, I'm slower than my teammate.
Yeah. No, I'm shit, mate. Sorry about that.
You're meant to be replacing Lewis to the point you're bringing you in as you're the next Lewis to carry on.
Can I just straight off the bat just say what I think about this? I don't care. Not in a way of like, but I don't have a problem with it. Like, if you, are you going to do? You can't go, oh, nah, sorry, mate. Yeah, I'm slower.
Yeah.
And if you're getting at him for that, think about it.
Yeah.
Have a word with yourself, because he can't just come out and go, yeah, nah, sorry, mate, Lewis is quicker.
Yeah.
He has to, even if it's not factually correct, all the lie detector is do you believe that you're faster? And of course he has to. He has to believe he's quicker than his teammate.
That question, are you faster than your teammate? Maybe apart from Stroll. If you ask any driver that question, they're going to say, yes, I am.
Yeah. And I think the wording of his answer actually arguably makes it a bit better. Now, yes. He's not saying he's faster than prime Lewis Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying he's better than seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton's entire career.
Yeah.
He's not saying he's the greatest, the GOAT, if you will,
yep.
like a certain Alex Albon, who, well, that was a GOAT performance, was, I can't lie. Was. You know, he's saying, as things stand right now, I reckon I got more pace than him.
Yeah.
That's calm. Lewis Back is himself. At the end of his career. George yeah. is like, not in his prime, but he's like heading towards it.
Yep.
He's in a quick car. He's got a lot of confidence. I yep. back it. You've got to back yourself.
Yeah, I'd question it more if he said no.
Could like, you imagine if he said no?
I'm slower than my teammate.
And it wasn't true. So in actuality, he thinks yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, the other way around. If he said, yes, I'm quicker.
Yeah.
But in reality, he thought no.
Yeah.
Because now mentally, he actually doesn't think. yeah. And he's still been a dickhead for no reason. So that would be worse.
This is the thing, right? That to get to this stage, to get even close to Formula One, you need to have some like crazy mindset. It's the same with any sport, right? To get to the very top, it's not just a physical game. It's a mental game. You have to have that approach and you have to have that desire. And George has shown that he's uncompromising, you know, many a time on track. And... yeah, that's what Mercedes, that's what Toto will want to hear. And, yeah. and like, you know, that's what you want from your driver if your driver is the one who's going to be the one to take on that lineage and carry the torch, which are, you know, no one's under any, you know, they would have kept Bottas if they wanted to keep it. You know, Lewis has said that Valtteri is his favourite teammate. And a big part of why Valtteri, I'm sure, was his favourite teammate is because Valtteri almost always played ball. And when he didn't play ball, it was a bit... awkward.
Yeah, but it was easy, wasn't it? Just slap him up every weekend and get to work. Like, you know, have some porridge and the next morning you're golden.
And this is, look, I know that, you know, George, in the same way that I think, you know, George coming in to Lewis's team that Lewis has dominated for so long and, you know, he's put it about and he's not always been the most kind of, especially compared to what it's not been the most kind of pliable and reasonable teammate at times. I think he's overstepped the mark. I think sometimes he, you know, he pushes a bit too hard. I get it. Why? But like he, you know, there is a changing of the guard coming. He knows it's going to be eventually and he wants to assert that, no, that, for example, right? If George thinks that maybe, okay, are they thinking about Leclerc? Like, if I don't do enough to really be like, I'm the guy to take you forward, then do they think about someone else? Do they think about Charles Leclerc maybe? Or, okay, Lewis is going to retire and then let's maybe pick up Charles because Charles is a proven multiple-time race winner. Could have challenged more for the title last year if Ferrari didn't fuck it up so bad.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure George has got to think about that, right?
Yeah, of course. You've got to play the mental game when you're doing this sort of thing. You know, not only will he actually believe, of course he's going to believe, like sportsman mentality, you've got to believe that you're the best in your field, right?
Of course.
But it is also the tactical game as well. He knows the seat's going to probably become available soon at Mercedes and he wants to know that he's going to be the number one. He's going to be the guy in that team. And also, I don't think Lewis, if you're Lewis and you see that interview, you're not going to go, man, he's so disrespectful. It's just going to motivate him to actually
Because
beat
Lewis
George.
Will think the same.
Of course, yeah.
Lewis thinks he's going to be like, quicker. Every driver would say the same.
Yeah.
Like if you're not, then there's an issue.
Yeah.
Like fundamentally, there is.
No self-confidence.
No, you've got to back yourself. So, you know what, like, I know, because George gets, catches some strays. Look, we're all in, like, come on. George Russell's, like, good crack. He's a good, like, character in F1.
Yeah.
I like seeing him about.
But what I will say is,
go on, what?
Didn't age well this weekend, though, did it?
It didn't.
No.
It was quite, the fact that came out and then literally what? I mean, I think Sky Sports posted that at about 6 p.m.
Yeah, and by then, 8, he was 18. So, there you go.
Unforced error in the wall. Sausage curb, not good.
Yeah. It was a weird one, really. He just obviously bounced over the sausage curb, but it felt savable. It felt savable. Like
we all know your driving credentials.
Yes, as a man, definitely has a driver's license.
I saw you in that KA.
Well, you didn't want to be in the KA, honestly. I think it looked like, again, it was a replay in it, but it looked like he got on the sausage curb and was like, yeah, I'm going wide here, but not too wide. It just stamped on the power and just like lost the back end and then hit the wall.
Yeah, there was more like two corrections
Verstappen,
there.
Verstappen did the exact same thing. Later in the race and was like, oh, almost binned it.
Mm.
but didn't and was really, like, but like didn't really come close to actually hitting the wall.
Yeah.
So it was unfortunate, but it was, yeah.
But I think that speaks as well. You know, we know that, you know, Lewis, based off the team radio, and I'm assuming the same was, like, them two were pushing.
Yeah.
Them two were pushing hard. Max probably wasn't pushing because he knows he probably doesn't, because he's got that ability within himself and within the car to win a race by 10 seconds, even with a safety car, and it all look pretty, pretty calm. But listen, next race, Austria. Austria's usually one that I love a bit of Red Bull Ring.
Yeah, throws up a decent race. Usually some mad qualifying sessions as well around Austria.
That's a super short lap, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit less margin for error. You only got a few corners.
I think it's like turn four, the one where everyone keeps getting pushed in on, wide onto the gravel. Yeah. That's always a bit dramatic, isn't it? Like Checo and Lando, and then it was
Checo and someone else.
Might have been Leclerc,
I think.
Might have been,
Albon and Hamilton as well. I don't mean to bring up the PTSD. I'm sorry.
Listen, Albon, more points. Okay, more points in Austria.
Seven.
But yeah, you can join us on the last lap live on the Sunday, the Austrian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Again, my flight will get me here on time. I'm going to Austria on Friday and Saturday, and I'm flying back Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'd rather watch a race on the screen with you lot, to be honest. Genuinely.
Oh, man.
Genuinely.
That's we love that. Did you hear that? Yeah. That's the dedication. He wants to watch the Grand Prix.
Because I actually want to know what's going on. Oh, to be fair, Austria, I think that's one of the few tracks you can probably see most of the track if you get a good spot.
Yeah, sit on a slight hill and you'll probably be able to see the entire, every corner, I reckon.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Good atmosphere as well around there. A lot of Max Verstappen fans. Orange smoke everywhere, obviously, because it's the Red Bull
ring. I have to bring my orange shorts.
Yes. Yeah. I'll try and remember to wear orange.
Yeah,
or I'll just bring a pyro. Fuck it.
Yeah,
just smoke.
Set out the fire alarm.
as the race is going on, just sound effects, lads. Don't worry.
Right, mate. Let's wrap it because
indeed
it's almost 10 p.m.
It's almost 10 p.m.
and I want to go home.
So much time.
You want to go home? Producer Alex wants to go home.
Yeah, I want some food.
Let's do it.
When and he's got a madras and I'm hungry.
Oh yeah, I have to get Pepsi on the way back.
Doner kebab. Oh god, I'm so hungry.
Oh right, where can they find us, Niren?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching on YouTube, then feel free to like and subscribe. Slap on those notifications as well. We've got shorts content going out on TikTok as well. So follow us over there. If you're audio only, then all streaming platforms are available there. Give us a 5-star rating, por favor. Yeah. Other than that, you can also find us on a Motorola flip phone, but only with data roaming off.
Yep.
If you've got data roaming on, it won't load,
Unfortunately.
So you can find us there.
Yep.
And also, you can find us on the back of a Heineken logo sticker, but only on bottles.
And on ratemypoo.com.
Yes, yeah, we are.
Do you remember that site?
That was crazy, yeah. That was actually, that has unlocked a memory in my brain. can confirm I never used it. But just a mental period in internet history. Not going to lie.
Well, listen, if you got this far on YouTube, particularly, comment down below. Inches.
That sounds mad out of context, but not sponsored either.
We're not sponsored by Inches, but comment Inches so we know you got to the end.
Yeah.
Big up everyone who's reached the end of the podcast. Thank you all for listening and watching wherever you are in the world. It's a pleasure as always. We'll see you next week for an off race week podcast.
Indeed.
There's a little break and then Austria. Boom. Lovely jubbly.
Sensational.
Cheers everyone for coming. Arrivederci.
Bye.